From the KTOO newsroom in downtown Juneau, I'm Zoe Gruskin with this statewide news update. The group pursuing a recall of Governor Mike Dunleavy has submitted signatures to state elections officials as part of an initial phase of its push. The recall Dunleavy group needed about 28,000 signatures as part of its application. It says it collected about 49,000 to compensate for any signatures that may be disqualified. The Division of Elections says it will begin the signature verification process and ask the Department of Law for an opinion on whether the grounds for recall listed in the application meet legal requirements. The division says it's aiming to complete this in 60 days. If the application is certified, it would trigger additional signature gathering. The Alaska Marine Highway System opened booking for its winter schedule today. But as KHNS's Claire Strumpel reports, there are fewer sailings and a new pricing system that could take travelers by surprise.
It'll be a lean winter for state ferries as the system reduces service across the board. That's following aggressive cost-cutting by lawmakers wary of Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto threats. They cut the budget by $43 million rather than risk losing it altogether.
We had to cut everywhere.
Meadow Bailey is a spokeswoman for the state's Department of Transportation.
I mean, really, so it's not a decision to cut one route versus another. It's a, you know, there's across the board, we had to, you know, reduce our service by a third because we just don't have, we don't have funding.
Yet some communities will feel the effects more than others. There are no sailings at all for the Prince William Sound communities of Valdez and Cordova in the 6 months after September. There are no changes to the draft schedule AMHS published in July, despite public testimony from communities that face being cut off for months. For those who still have the option to travel by ferry, it is likely to be more expensive. The Marine Highway is rolling out what it calls dynamic pricing.
This is really similar to what you would see like on an airlines, you know, as around dates and times when there is high demand, you know, tickets, those prices increase.
In real terms, that means passenger fares could climb by as much as 30%. A passenger going from Haines to Bellingham, Washington, can expect a base fare of about $500. But that could increase to nearly $650 if the ship fills up. Vehicle and cabin rates could rise as much as 50% on heavily booked sailings. And unlike airlines, the ferry system doesn't have competition from other passenger liners. It's a state-run monopoly. The system is also instituting an increase in change fees. Fees will increase for changes or cancellations close to travel dates. And fares will go up 10% for the days preceding and after special events. Ferry boosters are panning the changes.
This is unprecedented as far as I know.
Robert Venables heads both the Marine Transportation Advisory Board and Southeast Conference, a regional economic forum. He pulls double duty as the system's head cheerleader and a critic advocating reform.
Even back in the early days of the system, there was more service than this.
He acknowledges the financial challenges, but says the ferry is critical infrastructure that many small communities can't do without.
There are some communities, especially in Prince William Sound, where they're going multiple months without any service at all, and that is crushing to their economy.
He's especially concerned about Cordova, which has no road out. Reporting in Haines, I'm Claire Strumpel.
The cruise industry's public face in Alaska is stepping out of the limelight. John Binkley, a former Republican lawmaker and one-time gubernatorial hopeful, is leaving Cruise Lines International Association's Alaska chapter. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
In 2006, voters passed a ballot measure to tax and regulate cruise ships visiting the state. It was in response to high-profile pollution cases in Alaska and elsewhere. Months later, Fairbanks businessman John Binkley founded the Alaska Cruise Association.
It really was an insight, I think, for those of us in the industry in Alaska that there needed to be some work done to build stronger relationships between the industry and the people of Alaska.
The ACA would later challenge the voter-approved cruise ship head tax in court. It settled in 2010 with Governor Sean Parnell's administration, which agreed to reduce the amount of the tax and help usher through a bill that relaxed the wastewater permits now required on ships discharging in state waters. Cruise industry critic Joe Geldof, a Juneau attorney who helped write the ballot initiative, has watched Binkley for years.
Well, John Binkley is a very congenial individual with a 100-watt smile, and he's been effective in managing the PR campaign for the collective cruisers in a fairly effective way.
The ACA later merged with Cruise Lines International Association, the industry's global trade group, to create an Alaska chapter with Binkley in charge. In 2016, Binkley's group brought a federal lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of a fee that Juno charges companies for each cruise passenger. The judge's decision upheld the tax's legality, but the ruling significantly narrowed the way the money could be spent. Geldof says the court effectively handed the city and the industry a split decision.
You know, it was largely a waste of time, and the only people who came out ahead were the lawyers for the city and borough and the Cruise Association.
Juneau's city manager, Roy Watt, came to know Binkley through the nearly two-year court battle.
They filed it days before I became city manager, so I would say it started out pretty adversarial.
But he says the two were able to work through a lot of issues and achieve a decent working relationship.
Now that he's moving on, I wish him well. He's got a family business to attend to, and he wears many hats in this state.
Binkley does have a family business, or a portfolio of businesses, to be precise. His family owns a riverboat tour operation in Fairbanks. His kids own the Anchorage Daily News. One of his sons, Ryan, is helping lead a partnership trying to redevelop Ketchikan's former pulp mill into a huge new cruise ship dock. John Binkley says he'll be devoting energy toward getting that project approved by state and federal regulators. His many hats include 6 years in the state legislature in the 1980s. He unsuccessfully challenged Sarah Palin in the GOP primary for governor in 2006 and considered running again last year. CLIA Alaska Chairman Charlie Ball, a Carnival Corporation executive based in Seattle, said in the industry group's August newsletter that Binkley won't be replaced when he leaves in October. CLIA Alaska's two-person office, headed by Mike Tibbles, Sarah Palin's former chief of staff, will run the day-to-day. He declined to be interviewed. Ball didn't reply to requests for comment. But in a cell phone interview Wednesday from Seattle's airport, Binkley says he feels the cruise industry's relationship with Alaska host communities has improved since he started in 2007.
And the focus now for the industry is how do we move forward to make sure we ensure that Alaska remains a very desirable destination, and also at the same time making certain that the quality of life for the people who live in these Alaska communities is still of high quality.
Alaska cruise ship tourism is shattering previous records with more than 1.3 million visitors expected this year. Projections for the 2020 season haven't been released, but industry sources have advised communities to prepare for even more. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries violated the state's open meetings law. That's according to Alaska's ombudsman that released a critical report Tuesday saying the board improperly shifted the location of its Cook Inlet Finfish meeting earlier this year with little public notice. As KBBI's Renee Gross reports, the location issue is expected to be revisited next month.
When the Board of Fish moved its upper Cook Inlet Finfish meeting from Kenai to Anchorage, it took a lot of people by surprise. Kenai Mayor Brian Gabriel was one of them.
It was on the agenda. We just happened to get a heads up that they were going to consider that.
This is a big deal because for nearly two decades, these finfish meetings, which set fishing regulations for commercial sports and subsistence fishing, has been in Anchorage. But last year, the board decided to rotate the locations between Anchorage, Kenai Peninsula, and Matsu. Gabriel says fishermen from outside of Anchorage have been asking for this for years.
These meetings last for 2 weeks, and it's a commitment for folks to go up there and participate.
Gabriel says he thought the fight was finished after the board voted last year to hold its 2020 meeting on the Kenai Peninsula. And then word came down that the board was poised to reconsider at its January meeting in Anchorage. Gabriel and other area officials drove up to speak to board members, but then the message changed again.
We were told that they were not going to have the vote that day. Apparently they had some second thoughts about the public notice part of it. So we turned around and came home.
After they left, the board did vote after all. By a single vote, it changed the location of the 2020 meeting back to Anchorage. Board of Fish Chair Reed Morisky did not reply to a request for comment Wednesday, but in meeting tape from January, he admitted there had been some confusion in the room.
So I take full responsibility for that. There was no intent to mislead.
Investigators couldn't account for the last-minute change either.
He was not able to tell the investigator what the circumstances were that changed or how they had changed.
Alaska's ombudsman, Kate Burkhart, looked into the whole affair following a complaint to her office. but she says it was clear that the board wasn't following the rules.
It really did not follow the spirit of the law, which is that public entities do the public's work in public.
The ombudsman advised the board to hold a fresh vote, which it will do at its October meeting in Anchorage. Board of Fish Chair Reed Mariski wrote a letter to the ombudsman pledging the rotating meeting location policy will be revisited next month. Kenai's Mayor Brian Gabriel says he doesn't have a lot of faith the board will change course. But he says,
I hope they look at what they did and the effects of how those decisions have on our communities and would give that some consideration.
Still, he says he's grateful the ombudsman stepped in. Reporting in Homer, I'm Renee Gross.
And last month, Alaska's U.S. senators accompanied Education Secretary Betsy DeVos on a trip to communities around the state. The tour marked DeVos's first visit to Alaska as a member of President Trump's cabinet. The group visited schools in Wasilla, Kotzebue, Nome, and Kivalina. Kivalina is one of the Alaskan communities most threatened by erosion. Schools in other erosion-threatened communities like Nutak and Napakiak in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta need to be rebuilt because of erosion accelerated by climate change. When asked during her stop in Nome what federal resources the Department of Education could provide, she made no promises.
Our goal is to address and help support states and what they need to do and local districts. And so I'm sure if that does come into the wheelhouse, we will be taking a close look at it.
DeVos passed off a similar question to Senator Dan Sullivan in Anchorage, who is standing nearby.
So we're looking at ways to say, well, look, maybe we can change federal law to address these, what I would call, slow motion emergencies. And
Sullivan proposed creating a federal funding stream similar to hurricane relief. 64 degrees and mostly cloudy in Juneau. That's the latest from the KTOO newsroom.